but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
A little bit later on. Now, 49er football. What to make of the Niners? It's, they are in an interesting position, having just paid Brock Purdy, and now Brock is in a situation where he's got to be the guy, and he's got to run the offense and, prove himself with the money that he's making to be the top dog that that Kyle Shanahan is trusting, that John Lynch is trusting. Now, from my vantage point, you know, is this a situation where the 49ers have to, you know, does it work or does it not work? And does Brock Purdy's success end up dictating the future for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan? Our next guest, I think, is going to have an opinion or two on that. You know, I know this because I listened to his podcast, and I know where he comes out on a lot of this stuff on Candlestick Chronicles on the Blue Wire, you know, podcast network. So I've got an inkling of what Kyle Madsen thinks about this. But I tell you what, for late July, I can't help myself. I have got to talk some NFC West football. I've got to talk just football in general. And Kyle Madsen's going to help me do that. He obviously covers the Niners with USA Today, Niners Wire, Candlestick Chronicles podcast, and host of the Insiders on ESPN 1320. Kyle, let's talk some Niners, man. But how are you? How's your Friday going?
Yeah, you know, it's going well. Very busy, which is insane because I work in sports radio, and it's July 25th. These days should be easy, but I just added a new little 1 hour music show on our pop station on Saturdays. So I'm getting ready to put that together. I'm getting some writing done. I got some 49ers practice recaps I got to go through and do some writing on. So, you know, staying busy despite the slow time in the sports calendar.
Dude, what is the grind to Kyle Madsen? I mean, he looks the grind in the face and just slaps it up the head. You're doing everything.
Married to it. Plus, married to it.
You are. You're married to the game. Plus your show in Sacramento, the Insiders. I mean, you're talking a lot of Kings lately too. I mean, shoot, for late July, you've got plenty of content. It feels like. I know you're an A's fan, so, you know, there's some positive vibes. Well, you were an A's fan. Yeah, where do you come out with all that right now?
Yeah. Oh man, so obviously, you know, they're in Sacramento, and I do sports radio in Sacramento, so I follow them and do my job. But I consider myself an Oakland A's fan, not a West Sacramento A's fan, not a Las Vegas A's fan. But I'll never have a favorite team. I'll never have a different favorite team. So I still love baseball. It's my favorite sport. Hopefully there's a team in Portland one day and get up there for some games.
Come on now.
Head up to Seattle. I can head down to San Diego, LA, San Francisco, Anaheim. I got a bunch of places I can go to watch baseball still. So that'll be the move.
I'm always fascinated how people become fans or interested in the teams that they do. How'd you become a Niner fan?
My mom. The Raiders, when I was very small, were in LA, and my dad's a Raider fan. So my mom kind of had, well, she had Niners season tickets, and my dad was just kind of apathetic about the Raiders because they weren't in Oakland at the time. So my mom just kind of got free reign to mold me into a fan. It was the first game I ever went to. It was a Candlestick. And when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 and first really getting into sports, the 49ers were in the playoffs and stuff. So that was it, man. And never really looked back.
That's great, man. I'm a Seahawks fan just because my brother was a Niner fan. My dad was a Niner fan. My brother did not want me to be a Niner fan, so he said, find your own team. And the Seahawks were on TV, so I did that. Now, I think, mutual contact, we had Justice Mosqueda on the show yesterday, and he's a Portland guy, but he's a Packer fan because the Packers were on a bunch, in Portland back then, too. So it's always fascinating. Early vibes with the Niners. Kyle, let's just start big picture. Obviously, it's the first one post-big contract for Brock Purdy. I know it might be kicking in, not necessarily this season, but more in seasons down the road. But overall, how are the Niners feeling about themselves? How are you feeling about them here in late July?
I think they're in a pretty good spot. I think the proper thing to do when assessing where the 49ers are is adjust the expectations accordingly. I don't think as of July 25th, this is a Super Bowl team. They still have a lot of really good players. I think they're going to be a good team. Their schedule's not great. They should be, I think if a couple things don't go right, they should be in that 10 win range, 10, 11 wins, barring, you know, a catastrophic injury to one of their top guys. But I don't think that, you know, they want to win the Super Bowl, but I don't think that they really view this as a Super Bowl year in the way they might have in 24, 23, or any of the years since 2019. They're trying to kind of on the fly retool, and in the same way we saw the Rams do it, where they started leaning heavily on some young players. You still have your top guys, and you hope that a Puka Nacua type player develops, or a Jared Verse, you know, develops and gives you a star. But I think the Niners are kind of trying to do that with their rebuild this year. They had, I think it was eight or nine draft picks last year. They had 11 draft picks this year. They let some of their more expensive, less effective veterans walk, and they're going to kind of hand the keys to the young guys and hope that Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey and Fred Warner and Nick Bosa can kind of carry that group to, you know, I think ideally a playoff berth. And if everything goes right, maybe they're more competitive than that. But I think they're probably in a good spot for kind of how the offseason went for them, where it was this mass exodus, but they executed a plan. They had a plan. And I think if you ask them, they feel like they're kind of right where they want to be.
Now, it's kind of insane the success they've had at the QB position when they keep pivoting and tweaking and pivoting, and they keep getting the production, just enough production and the right production that they need out of that position to be a contender in the NFC and almost win a Super Bowl a couple of times.
Yeah.
Now it's the big extension for Brock Purdy. Now, I heard you and Chris talk about this on your pod. What does the commitment to Brock Purdy mean for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch?
It ties their wagon to Brock Purdy. It's not really often in the NFL that you get a coach and a GM pairing that they get this many tries at quarterback, because it was really clear from the jump that Kyle Shanahan wanted Kirk Cousins in 2018, but then Jimmy Garoppolo becomes available. Okay. Yeah, they trade a second round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. He gets at the time what was the biggest contract ever for an NFL player that following offseason after going 5-0 as the 49ers starter. That winds up not fully working out, so they get to trade up now for Trey Lance. They trade the farm to go up and get Trey Lance. That obviously crashes and burns. But now they've fallen backwards into Brock Purdy being an effective player with the final pick in the draft. They're now paying Brock Purdy. To me, this is it. I'm a big believer in Kyle Shanahan too. I'm not one of those people that's like, Kyle Shanahan's... No, I think Kyle Shanahan's a good coach. He's got his flaws, but I think he's overall a good coach. And I think John Lynch does a nice job as kind of the face of the front office is the GM. I think his GM job is probably a little bit different than like a hardcore personnel guy. But I think what they have going is nice. But if the Brock Purdy thing doesn't work out, and I mean that from a standpoint of, like, they crash and burn, like 8-9 this year, they're 7-10 next year. If that doesn't work out, I don't know how you move forward with this group. They've gotten a really, really long... Like, Kyle Shanahan's going into his ninth year as the 49ers head coach. That's a long time to be head coach in the NFL. So I think that the Purdy signing is, you know, going to kind of make or break the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch tenure. If we're sitting here in 2030 and they're still the coach and the GM, I think it probably means that Brock Purdy's been pretty good and they might have won a title on that stretch. So that's kind of what they did. They committed to this guy, and it's their last to me, it's their last shot.
Do you believe in championship windows?
Yeah, of course.
What
do you not?
I do. I think I say it with a bit of a smirk, only because I think people, they love to debate whether or not a team has entered or exited a championship window, sometimes with a little too much haste. But when you hear somebody say that the 49ers have their championship window has closed, what's your immediate reaction to that?
Yeah, I agree. Because to me, you have a championship window to me when you are it's a little bit arbitrary, but if you go into a year going, we think we can win the Super Bowl. So I think like the Eagles are there. Obviously the Chiefs, as long as Patrick Mahomes is there, I think are going to be in that realm. Baltimore probably feels that way. I think Buffalo probably feels that way. Like, okay, you got this window, you got this run where you're going to be making moves with the hope of winning a championship that year. I think the 49ers window closed last year because they got rid of every semi overpriced underperforming veteran. They brought in a bunch of rookies. And I think when you're going to play as many rookies as they're going to play this year, I don't think you're expecting to win a title, to be frank. And maybe everything goes great. Maybe everything goes right. And Mykal Williams is the defensive rookie of the year. And Nick Martin, their third round linebacker, is the second coming of Dre Greenlaw. And Alfred Collins, their second round pick from Texas, is the next DeForest Buckner. He's not. They're different players, but you get it. Just a dominant force inside. And all of a sudden the Niners are cooking, right? And Christian McCaffrey's healthy and George Kittle's awesome again. Hey, maybe they go 14-3. Maybe they're the one seed and they have the inside track and then we can reassess. But to me, your Super Bowl window is open or your championship window is open when the moves you make in the offseason are with the goal of winning a championship.
I do think that's fair. I also believe in championship windows. I just maybe it's just a knee-jerk reaction to like when ESPN talks about it or debates it that makes it a little nauseating. But I think if you do
analyze it
and you look at it with some objectiveness, and you do that with your own team here, my heart breaks a little bit. Look, I'm a Seahawk fan. Like, I don't necessarily root for the Niners, but I freaking love football. Sure. And I love what Kyle and John have done. Like, I do enjoy Niners style of football for the last couple of decades, even with Harbaugh and previous to that. It makes me a little bit disappointed. I can't imagine people that actually root for the team that they were so close twice to the same team and couldn't get it done when now it's probably, definitely more likely than it isn't that they won't get back there anytime soon.
But also, can we just keep it a stack with the 49ers and Seahawks for a second? It's way more fun. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening up there in Portland who are Seattle Seahawks fans. Let's keep it a buck for a second. The season's more fun when those teams are good or one of those two teams is good. Even when the 49ers were terrible and the Seahawks were beating their faces in twice a year, every year, it was like, all right, at least like this rivalry game is fun. At least, okay, the Niners are bad, but can you get a win against Seattle? Can you knock off Seattle late in the year? Like that, oh man, you play spoiler. I think that it's a really fun rivalry. And I think there's a mutual respect between the two sides. At least there is for me and my buddies who are Seahawks fans. I think it's more fun when the Seahawks are good, at least from my perspective.
Man, I mean, no question. Just in the previous segment, I was kind of reminiscing. I was talking about Jalen Carter in Philly, and trying to talk myself into not being disappointed that Seattle didn't take him at five instead of Devin Witherspoon. And I was just thinking about Vic Fangio, and I started thinking about the Niners defenses of the early 2010s and the Seahawks, obviously, defenses of the early 2010s, and just how freaking physical the Seahawk Niner battles were in 12, 13, 14, obviously the NFC title. I'm still pissed about, I think it was an early December road game in Santa Clara when Frank Gore ran for like 100 yards and had like a big long run.
The goal line.
And Earl Thomas took a bad angle on Frank Gore and it was a hell of a season, but those battles were iconic. And I think we might be getting a little bit closer to there. I wanted to ask you about this. Week 1, Week 18, bookended Seahawk-Niner games. What an interesting way to frame the season this year for both teams.
I think I hate it.
Yeah, me too, honestly.
I think division games in the first 4 weeks suck because nobody's playing their best football at that point. You're throwing Week 1 out the window every year. Weird things happen in Week 1. The Seahawks could win by 40, the 49ers could win by 40, and that Week 18 battle could still be moot because the team that lost by 40 went 13 and I'm going to do bad math here, 13 and 2 the rest of the way.
Right.
And the team that won by 40 is 500. Like, it just, so I hate the week one. The week 18 is fun though, man. That week 17 game in 2019 is some of the most fun I've ever had watching a football game. And if there's any chance of that again this year, which I kind of think there is, to me, the NFC West is a major, major toss up. You could tell me, you could convince me any order of the NFC West, any order of NFC West finish, and I would believe you. So I think there's a real chance that Seahawks Niners week 18 game is either for the division or for a playoff spot. I think there's going to be a lot on the line in week 18, but that week one matchup's gross. I hate that a lot.
That makes me feel better about the Seahawks chances. But no, I agree. I agree with you. It's just a weird aesthetic on the schedule. A couple last things for Kyle Madsen, ESPN 1320 in Sacramento, host of the Insiders, also writes about the Niners at USA Today and Candlestick Chronicles on Blue Wire. Pass catchers, how is this all going to shake out for the 49ers in 2025?
Poorly? Yeah. No, man, if Ricky Pearsall is healthy, I think they're going to be okay, because I am of the belief that Ricky Pearsall can play a little bit. Let's take away the gunshot wound to the chest that he suffered 1 week before the regular season began. It cost him the first 6 weeks of the season. Let's remove that from the equation. He got basically no training camp last year. He had a hamstring injury at the beginning of camp. Then he came back and had a shoulder injury. He didn't play in any preseason games. He barely practiced. And then he misses the first 6 weeks of the year after getting shot in the chest, which is still just insane.
Crazy.
And he comes back and he was good. He had a pretty nice little season. He had this weird 5 week lull where he had like one catch and nine targets. It was not great, but he finished the season really strong. He started the season strong. So I think he's a good player if he's healthy. And if you get Juwan Jennings and you get Ricky Pearsall and you have George Kittle and if Christian McCaffrey's out there, I think they're going to be fine. DeMarcus Robinson, veteran receiver they signed in the offseason, is if he's your third receiver, you could certainly do worse. So, man, I think they're going to be okay from that standpoint, from the pass catching standpoint. But it's gonna rely a lot on Ricky Pearsall being healthy and DeMarcus Robinson getting suspended, because when you start getting past them on the depth chart, it gets pretty bleak. And then Brandon Ayuk's TBD. I have no idea when he's coming back, and when he does come back, I'm expecting 60 to 70% of Brandon Ayuk. So I'm not fully banking on him this year, but Pearsall's healthy, Jennings healthy, Kittle's healthy. I think they'll be okay.
Ducks and Beavs fans in the area. First of all, you're right. Ton of crossover in the football market here of Seahawks fans, Niner fans, Bronco fans, and then your Steeler Cowboy fans. It's a fascinating amalgam of football fans that we have here in Portland, but Beav and Duck fans aplenty. Now, Isaiah Hodgins will be battling for a roster spot potentially on this team. We're all rooting for him. Locally, Jordan James, a recent draft pick as well on that running back depth chart. Diameter Lenore. Yeah, exactly. Lenore doing what he is doing. This guy has been a lot of fun to watch, and had a little legal thing there last month or so. So we'll see how that might impact availability. But overall, got the big money. He's got to be one of those rising defensive stars for a Niner defensive unit that has had some ducks on it before, and Armstead and Defoe, and obviously this one in the secondary.
Yeah, quack quack, man. So the Lenore thing is really interesting, because you're right. He's a gangster, man. He is a really good player, and they got him for, you go look at the cornerback contracts and I think the quality of player he is, that's a bargain. 5 years and $88 million with I think 20 guaranteed, 25 guaranteed, something like that. It just, when he signed it, I'm like, man, what? I feel like you could have gotten way more. And then you see Sauce Gardner get, and Sauce is awesome, like, don't get me wrong, but 4 and 120,
right?
Like, whoa. And the Niners got Lenore for that. It just, and Sauce is a better player. Don't get it twisted, but they're not that far apart contractually. So, yeah, man, I think they're relying heavily on Diamador Lenore to be a really, really good player for them. He was awesome last year. And, I think you're going to see him be really good again this year. In fact, I think this year, his production, like the raw stats, might actually dip a little bit because I think quarterbacks are probably going to target him less. I think he was targeted like the 13th most among corners last year, but he actually, talked about Sauce Gardner, gave up a lower passer rating than Gardner did. Wow. on like double the attempts. So yeah, man, really impressed with Lenore, and I think he's getting better. It wouldn't shock me if he's a Pro Bowler this year.
Love talking ball with you, Kyle. Thanks for doing it. He's the host of the Insiders, ESPN 1320 in Sacramento. Now a music DJ on the side too.
I mean, holy cow. Yeah, dude. Little K-pop show, little K-pop hour.
I got to tune into this. Candlestick Chronicles on the Niners on Blue Wire and managing editor at the Niners Wire on USA Today. He is probably joking, and he's at Kyle A. Madsen on the social. Great to do this with you, man. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, please. Hit me up anytime.
We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Judah Newby filling in Baldface Truth, 750 The Game and the BFT Radio Network.